If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Hello and welcome to Ben Linney, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are in the House of Dragons, Season 2, Episode 6. We don't have the title just yet for this one, but I felt like this one was a bit long, and not in a bad way, but I felt that this was a long episode, and in looking at the runtime, it actually was. I was starting to feel like I was getting to that movie territory almost. Which I liked, but what did you think, Matt? What did you think of the episode?
Well, real quick, just on the thing, because, you know, we had talked about this, and we've been talking about it all season. Small Folk, by the way, they just posted the title of it, is what it's called.
Love it.
Which I thought of the episode would be called Dragon Seeds, but I guess not. But, by the way, they released the run times, and the last two episodes are all over, like, 70 minutes. So, this season, you remember that's one of the things that was talked about was, oh, they're cutting it down to 8 episodes. We said we know we're getting a few longer episodes. I think you might have 2 full episodes in there just from the extra run times.
Yeah.
Certainly more than one. So it's really like maybe 9.5 episodes, because it's not like the 50-minute episodes Game of Thrones was.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it, I mean, it might be 9.5. I mean, it's not. It's just, you know, they're doing it in longer episodes rather than more episodes.
Yeah, and I think that you're starting to see kind of like maybe the idea behind it outside of budget, by the way. Budget's a huge thing where they divide episodes up because they're going to shoot in certain locations for whatever. And, you know, you can have more budget per episode, which tends to be very useful when it comes to those big battle scenes. And I do think the CGI for the dragons and the stuff this season has been better. But, you know, one thing I'm starting to feel... We kind of touched on this a little bit last week, but I feel like there's so many characters, dude. Like, there's many things that
at least now, and now we're feeling more weight of those extra characters, like we did in this episode.
Yeah, and part of me is very glad for it, but now I'm also starting to see why these episodes are, you know, about 70 minutes, and maybe they're deciding to put it to lesser episodes because some of these scenes aren't flushed out. Oh no, I did it again.
There we go. Hey, shout out! I got to look his name up. He sent us the thing. He joined us on Patreon, man. Let me. What was his name? Sir Jim, I think.
Oh no.
Let me pull it up.
I have not had this big of a complex since someone told me.
Joe Cool.
Joe Cool.
Sir Joe of House Cool. Yeah.
I have not had a complex this big since someone told me my left eye was lower than my right.
And he said he wasn't even trying to be like, well, actually, guys, you know, It was funny because I made a bunch of jokes about it on follow-up Friday.
Yeah, I watched it, by the way. Thanks for sending positive vibes, everybody, while I was on my work trip that I definitely did not want to be on, and it was just as bad as I expected it to be. But regardless, talking about this episode and talking about the runtime and things, so many characters, and there's a lot of stuff that isn't ironed out enough to where I feel like we can do the Game of Thrones thing where we cut away to like a 10-minute scene with like Corlys and his sons. Or maybe you could, but there is a feeling that they want to make sure they're touching on bases as we go through the episode. And one of the things that I actually like about this approach is they are still doing a really nice job of thematically connecting these things, but also making us compare the sides. Like this episode, there's a clear separation between the regent and his master of whispers, Laerys, whereas Rhaenyra is clearly getting very close to her master of whispers. So like
Massaria, man, she's just saying, you know what, I'll go after king and queen.
Huge character. And much before Adam. But see, like those scenes are quick, but they are connected, so that makes the episode feel like it has a little bit more unity. But I'm definitely feeling just how many ways were being pulled, and the more I watch, the more I realize that this is a ridiculously difficult adaptation to do, to try to stay as loyal as they can, while obviously adding stuff in because of the sparse detail we get in Fire and Blood. But this episode was all over the place, not in a bad way, but like we went with about everybody that you could imagine other than maybe Otto on the screen. But I was into this episode the entire time, dude. I felt the runtime, but it wasn't a bad feel. It was kind of like, man, we're getting all this stuff. This is great. And there was three or four times where I felt the episode could have ended and I would have been happy. Specifically, Laerys and Aegon's conversation, I thought was going to be the closing scene because I don't look at my watch. So I don't know what the time is going to. But I'm like, oh, this is the final scene. And then it kept going. And I was like, oh, I kind of like that scene. Oh, I kind of like this scene. And it just kept going. And I was like, God, dude, this is a crazy show that they've set out to make. But I found myself really into this episode. I know it's a slower one. Last week was the most tumultuous episode so far in season two, maybe in the show's history so far, in House of the Dragon at least. But I don't know, dude. I this to me felt really good. This is the same person who did Lord of the Tides, which is the highest rate episode for season one. And I thought a lot of the shots were really cool. There was a lot of moving shots during the dialogue of the small council where you could kind of almost feel the tides shifting a little bit as Aemon like really asserts himself. Just like little things like that, the dragons like snoring in the background of Rhaenyra's scene with Massaria. Like, I don't know. I was very immersed in this episode, even though obviously, you know, this is kind of setting the road up to these final two episodes.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the things I loved about that council scene, too, is at the end when Alicent, who, by the way, we're really beginning to feel Alicent's role as it goes sort of the way it goes in the books, which is and I talked a lot about this in Follow Up Friday. And one of the things I loved about that scene last week where it's just zooming in on her and everyone's talking and it's like getting more muffled and it's just showing her face is that Alicent. In the books, I mean, she does become less powerful and less important. And the story doesn't even kind of shifts away from her.
And because she keeps making bad decisions, it feels sheath your swords. Like, no, don't sheath them now. Like, yeah. You need to use them. What are you talking
about? Excuse me. Yeah, exactly. So, but when she was talking to Aemon and she's talking about, like, you know, your childhood, was it really, you know, I'm sorry, you have to deal with the pains of your childhood. And I loved how they did that shot from the right side, right? So she's like holding him and saying, you know, trying to be like very motherly. And then he's sort of left with the pain of his childhood, which is losing his eye and all of these things. And so the final shot is still him thinking about it, but it's from the side of the eye patch. I thought that was a very, just very cool shot to see. The other best shot, I think, in this episode, and where I actually would have ended the episode, was when Sea Smoke comes down and is staring him down, staring Adam Hall down. I thought that would have been the coolest place to end the episode. I actually kind of didn't like the ending actually kind of felt like a little abrupt. Now I'm thinking like, oh, she's actually going to go fly off and meet somebody. And then, oh, no, it just cut to credits. And I was like, oh, okay. all right, but
well, I think the idea here is, so we have to take what we've gotten from Adam, right? Is the fact that he seems like he is not super pleased with his father at this point, and he feels like he is owed something. And now he happens to have a dragon that's on his father's side. Like, he now has the chips. He has the power play. And Rhaenyra's got to go head this off now. And how is she going to handle this thing? So I almost feel like it was a bit of a cliffhanger of what's going to happen whenever this bastard born Valyrian says, "Oh, your dragon likes me." I kind of like it, but I will say I thought it was also going to end many different times. But one of the endings I thought was going to be Sea Smoke staring down at him. And then we cut. And then next episode, we hear that, you know, Sea Smoke's being written, but they gave that to us. So I don't know, man. This episode just kept going and going and going.
I think the point of the where they ended it was to show that Rhaenyra is now taking action.
And I thought this was her best episode of the season.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I guess just to sort of give my thoughts of the episode as a whole, I liked it. I went 4 out of 5 stars over on our YouTube poll. There was a lot of moving pieces. I felt like a lot of the, you know, like last week was really slow, but I feel like we're starting to beginning to see things that they've been setting up this whole season come to fruition, right? Like Ulf, right? Mm-hmm. Ulf the White and Hugh Hammer were given a little more screen time in today's episode. And the playing of the small folk, right, began to really ramp up, and we're seeing things are anxious. Rhaenyra sending food, I thought was great. And then, of course, how can we not mention the king is back, baby?
And what
Paddy Considine.
What a nice surprise. I saw it, I yelled. I audibly yelled.
So I thought at first, though, when he was doing the lines, because it's the exact same lines, I kind of thought for a second, like, oh, maybe they like CGI'd him in and they're using like the same lines of the dialogue, until we started getting a few different lines. And I was like, oh no, he's actually there. And then, of course, we got a whole nother scene later in the episode. Mm-hmm. But at first I was like, oh man, I hope he was actually showed up for it, because it's the exact same lines. So at first I thought they were like reusing the footage some way or something. And then I was like, no, he's actually there. And so that made it a lot cooler.
I will say, whenever Viserys is crying over the corpse and you have Daemon come in and comfort him, which I don't believe he did and he wishes he had, that got me a bit emotional, man. Like, I still have so much love for Paddy's Viserys, you know, performance. It is so good. And Viserys is such a good king. And we even hear from it, right? Even the small folks said, hey, Viserys liked his tourneys and his drinks, but he never did it whenever we did without. And then they said, well, it's a different era. And I was like, God, it is. That's sad. Yeah. It is. Poor Viserys.
Yeah, I felt like everybody kind of got a shine in this, with the exception of Corlys Velaryon, who they literally just kind of show as like, oh yeah, he's still here.
The shine is going to his sons,
right? And he will be a huge player in the next two episodes, no doubt. But you know, it's like last week started off with him, this week started off with him, and he's just kind of fumbling with the hand of the kingpin. It's like, all right, we're just kind of trying to remind you that Corlys is still here.
This is the hard thing. There's so many players. Like, how much screen time do you give them? You only have a certain amount of money and a certain amount of, you know, hours to execute your ideas. But this is one of those times where it's like, is there a chance that maybe cutting some of this stuff would help? You know, like, I know everyone gets really mad when things are cut.
I don't think so. I don't think they're going to have to.
I'm fine with it. However, it just makes you wonder.
Because I even argued a little bit with last week's and Follow Up Friday, and here as well, you could almost argue that this is like a little bit of like filler. But again, you sort of have to. The whole show is going to be sort of filler. I'm not saying the parts aren't, but a lot of the stuff they're adding is, of course, to flush out the fact that they, you know, don't. This it is sort of like an outline. I kind of thought the dragon seeds was going to be like, I thought like we would be done with the dragon seeds last episode. Mm-hmm. We haven't even really started the dragon. We're in the middle of it, but they haven't gotten to the point to where they're going to, you know, again, this isn't crazy spoiler territory, since they already talked about it. And we saw it a little bit this week. It continues on going and trying to bring other people in to ride dragons.
Right.
I thought we would be done with all of the Dragon Riders last week. I thought that was going to be like the whole focus of last week's episode. So now we still have to do that.
Yeah, but I think what the idea here is like making sure people understand what's going on, but not just that, but making them care about it as well. We have to have these like bricklaying moments to get those big payoffs. So I'm really hesitant to say filler on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Especially because like if there was more filler, like we would probably get a little bit more of like random Masaria scenes of her interacting with like the Kingsguard and stuff. You know what
when
I mean?
Like when she's banging Rhaenyra.
And I
don't mean to use the word filler as like a bad thing, because you actually do have to fill out this show because the way the story is told in the books. Yes. I mean, in the World of Ice and Fire book, it's literally like 3 pages. So
it's a plot driven retelling of a history, whereas this is a dynamic character driven show that happens to also have a pretty cool plot. It's a totally different beast to tackle. So like you have to have those little scenes, I think, for it to not feel like a Cliff Notes show, which we do not want. We do not want Cliff Notes ever again after season 8, right? So I think with that, you know, there's gonna be some things we're gonna think about. We're gonna go, well, could they have mixed this around? And there's faults in the show for sure. You know, there's always things we can critique, but once we have the full picture, I think that we'll be able to look at some of these small scenes like me and you did back when we rewatched season 1. Remember how many times we were like, you know, that scene when I first watched it didn't hit like it did on the second rewatch. You know, it's like, holy cow, they were really cooking with that. I think season 2 is going to have a whole lot of those moments as well, especially when it comes to like tying meanings together, like the Master of Whisper thing that I mentioned a little bit earlier. But also just like really subtle things like the shot being on the eye patch side with Allison. Like that's the little stuff in those moments that are not verbally told to you, but that's still part of the storytelling. So that scene right there, you know, someone might look at that and go, well, we didn't need that. But that does a lot for both of those characters, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, let's dive into some points here. Hey, Reigns of Castamere. That was kind of cool.
I loved starting the opening episode, shot.
I loved it. As soon as I saw the Lannisters, I was like, oh, I bet they're playing Reigns of Castamere. So mm-hmm. I cranked the volume. Yep, they were. And they had
loved
lions.
It.
Had lions. Yes. That was pretty cool. So we got a little thing there. Then we cut to Aemond in command on the small council, making moves. Basically told his mom to shut up.
Sounding kingly, I got to say.
Yeah, he's ready to reign, essentially.
Did you feel the trepidation from Larys in this scene and then him end up going to Aegon? And my question to you would be, do you think this is Larys genuinely feeling like Aemond is not a good king? Or do you think it's because he cannot control Aemond and he can control Aegon?
I think it's a lot of things. I think that he does it, one, because he probably realizes he does have a little more control over Aegon than he would Aemond. Mm-hmm. Two, I think he actually probably, to some degree, now maybe he likes Aegon a little bit more, that he is injured, right? I mean, that's something we saw with like Tyrion. You know, one of the reasons Tyrion liked Jon Snow was that he was a bastard, mm-hmm. right? And they kind of had that chip on their shoulder. Aegon doesn't even barely have a shoulder anymore. So, I mean, yeah. So, yeah. So I think that is because when he was giving him that speech, you know, he was sort of like, oh, I can help you prepare now that you're no longer mm-hmm. going to be like a battling king. You know, you have to start using your mind. And that's one of his areas, obviously, of expertise. So I think there's probably a little bit of sincereness to it. There was a cool line in there, by the way, when he talked about how, oh, there might have been sorcery at play by somebody in Harrenhal when I was.
Think we all thought by Alice Rivers in that moment.
For sure. Yeah. Which Simon Strong, by the way, did mention her specifically. So that kind of gets rid of the is she a ghost thing. But Damon's tripping ball. So who knows?
Yeah, really.
So, but back to the council meeting, they start suggesting, hey, let's marry Allison off.
Oh my, whenever they, as soon as I heard Red Kraken, first off, I was like, I love just hearing that the Greyjoys are just being the Greyjoys out there. But as soon as they said that he could be enticed, I was like, oh, they're going to try to marry Allison to this Red Kraken. Like that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. You will marry the Night King, right?
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah. And I put, you know, he also wants to, seems like his deal with Cole too is a little bit more of like, yeah, I think it's time for me to get rid of Kristen Cole since he knows what happened there. It was a little bit, it seemed a little bit more than just like, hey, I want to send you to battle because I want to win. It definitely felt a little bit more like, nah, I think it's time to get rid of him because he knows all about it.
I think Aemond is also now in a position, like we've seen him vulnerable. Like I have felt like empathetic towards Aemond, but I think he has embraced his villain side. I think that his redemption in his eyes is in full display. Like it's in motion now. And whenever he saw that Cole came back and was pretty shell shocked, I think he said, oh, okay. Like you're not cut out for this. Like you can't handle what I'm about to do. So you will march and then you will go die for me. And if that is how it turns out, then that's fine. That's kind of the feeling I got, but I really like what you're saying too. Kristen Cole's one of the only people that really know what happened there.
And yeah, I think there was a little bit of that too, especially because the way he gives the conversations to Aegon, right? There's a lot of memes, right, of him, you know, that were floating around this week, like don't tell mom, you know, like, you know, it's like, your brother when you're playing, like, don't tell mom, you know. So there was definitely a little bit of that, but I will say I did take a note and I said finally some commanding performance by Aemond, who's felt like he's been missing this whole season. So it was nice to finally see him get a really carry a scene and have like a strong commanding presence, because you feel it when you're watching.
Yeah, I think we've been building to this moment all season, though, like with the whorehouse scene where he's in a fetal position. We see that twice, right? We hear him talking about regretting about Luke, and then we see Aegon embarrass him. And, you know, this has been a multifaceted journey to get to this point where Aemond can take charge. But this is like a great example of those little scenes that end up building to these moments. And Aemond isn't burning anyone alive this episode, but he is commanding an entire council scene by himself, telling his mom that she's fired and demanding, you know, that he would be able to, that everyone should be marching on Harrenhal and whatnot. So like, I think like the trickling of him throughout the season makes this a little bit more impactful. Like he hasn't worn out his welcome. He's went through meaningful change week in and week out, even in brief scenes. And this episode, I really felt like he delivered. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. And so, yeah, one of the things I was really interested to see too with that was, I guess for me with Aemond, I felt like if you go back and watch some of the first two episodes, like episode one, we didn't get the fallout of him as much,
which sucks.
Dealing with Luke, and so I've been waiting for him to have like a big moment, and I felt like this was it. Now the books also talk a little bit about it embellishes a little bit more about when he is in this role right now, and it says that, you know, it's one of those like I think Mushroom says or whatever. Mm-hmm. That he sits the Iron Throne. So we have to see whether or not he'll actually do it. They kind of hinted at it a little bit last week where Helena was there and she's like, was it worth the price? So we'll have to see if he actually will end up doing that. But yeah, I said Aemond is essentially putting Allison out to pasture.
I think she actually does walk through a field next episode based on like the, you know, coming,
literally.
It was like a little like a preview and she literally was walking through a field. So
there you go. Okay. All right. So I have my notes. So I would like you to try and ride a dragon, which is where Allison tells her duckling, and he's all in.
This poor bastard.
I mean, she started. I mean, I get the idea of, hey, we want to do it, but she started way too far down the line. She's like, well, your great grandmother was, and it's like, now we're looking for people who are like half Targaryen bastards, not people who have like a trickle way down the line. That was that makes it seem way worse.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, everyone had to kind of suspect that he was about to get, you know, Jacarist into the earth. I felt bad for the dragon keepers though, bro. Like they're just trying to like, you know, serve sea smoke, serve. And I'm like, you're gonna die. And they did. They burned. What about the dude slicing their neck open when they were burning alive?
Oh,
he's that like, nope. Was rude. I mean,
it. I'd rather do that than suffer a few more seconds of pain.
Hey. Or God forbid you survive and look like, you know, that would be way worse than what Aegon's going through. I mean, no, thank you.
They were definitely not surviving. But no. I mean, literally, it's like, I think that was actually a pretty cool scene to show just how powerful dragon fire is, because You have somebody who's literally almost dead, and would rather cut his throat than die of dragon fire because it probably hurts that much more. So, yeah. I mean, literally, it's like you're going to save yourself like 3 seconds, right? I mean, it's not that long. Excuse me. It's not that long that you're going to save yourself, but he decides, no, I'd rather still just pull the trigger.
Yeah, I'm pro. We'll just call this Westerosi assisted suicide. I don't know. I'm for it. I don't blame him. I thought that scene was really powerful. There was like a lot of stuff like on a lower, like forget about like Regency and all this stuff or the dragons for a second, but like a lot of like pain and suffering on a human level. Like we have the dragon fire burning, but we also really see the effects of like the food being restricted in King's Landing. And I thought that scene was really powerful overall. And just like, how does this work in a town or a city where food is not coming in? And then whenever he gets the bowl and he's like, a little thin, isn't it? And it's like, well, do you want that or the fish again? And he's like, oh my God. But like you see this riot and then the joy in people's eyes when they realize that they have food, but then the chaos that immediately falls. Like I thought there was like a lot of really small details with that made this episode really good, including, you know, the idea of like when you're in so much suffering, maybe you'd rather just end it. Like that seems like something any human could probably relate to. So
yeah, the food stuff was great because it also gives Masaria something a little more to do, and it makes her feel a little more powerful. We felt her and her webs out there, right? With Aemon's, you know, favorite whore was in there and she's talking. Mm-hmm. And sort of sowing seeds of dissent, right? So that was pretty cool to see that. And so it's spreading. So the small folk are getting more and more ramped up, right? We're seeing that each and every week. Yeah. So that is definitely a big part. And this week we felt it because it helps Rhaenyra, essentially, because now people are in there saying, hey, Rhaenyra gave us food. Rhaenyra the kind, right? Long live Queen Rhaenyra. So that was a good thing to help Masaria feel much more powerful.
Yeah, revolutions and revolts have often been built on the hungry stomachs of peasants. That is a very consistent thing throughout history. So I like that they implemented it here. And then, you know, going back to the dragon thing, which I was trying to kind of connect it to, like, I'm wondering if some people be like, why would that guy try to ride the dragon? But I think that with the mindset that these dragons are gods and that you being chosen by the queen to ride this beast, that you might be worthy enough. Like that would be
everything. He also may not know about his family's history and that he might have heard for the first time that, hey, you actually have some Targaryen blood in you. So,
yeah. Seemed like a loyal guy to the queen, too.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So like just that based off an instruction, he's going to do it. But I think that there's like this idea that like I might be special, like that, that would drive someone to do something like that. And, you know, maybe so subtly being pushed towards it, even though Rhaenyra's like, now you're doing this by yourself, right? Like I didn't coax you into this, like Rhaenyra. You kind of did a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to the riot. And I think we'll kind of continue on and then we'll just cover Daemon's thing as its own thing since that feels sort of separate. Yeah. So, okay. So then the riot takes place, right? They go to the sept, the sept and they're praying and then they go outside. Yeah. Cuts the guy's arm off. And literally in my notes, cause you just know that it's going to be, you just know it's going to be pure chaos. Man, poor Helaena. And Allison gets a fish thrown in her face.
Yeah, you know, Helaena's one of those people that since, you know, first half of the season, she was a little bit more present, especially the first two episodes, and it's kind of been sparing since then. I was glad to see her in this episode, but it made me miss her performances. Like, I was like, man, I would not mind, you know, seeing a little bit more. But she's here. A bird stops singing, which I feel like that's probably a pretty important sign that we should take on. When I looked up birds stop singing or stop chirping, it says birds may stop singing when they no longer defend their territory or when they join feeding flocks to find food, which is interesting because the birds stop singing and they go out and now we have all these little birds from Flea Bottom who are chasing the feed. I don't know if that's the symbolism that they're going for there, if there's maybe some other stuff that I'm missing, and this is just with a quick Google search. But as soon as that bird wasn't singing, I was like, yep, this ain't gonna be good. Something bad's over.
Yep, it's over. Yeah, so loved that scene. And then, okay, we get to Laris, which we talked a little bit about. And then that scene, too, with Aemon going in there, talking to Aegon, being like, oh, hey, the king has recovered. He's like, oh, what good news? And he's like, you can tell, obviously, he's pissed about it. And then he goes in and kind of squeezes him a little bit. And, yeah, but then I did love the Laris conversation.
The Laris conversation may be my favorite part of the episode. And I think the dude playing Laris is a phenomenal, like, this is what I was talking about kind of like earlier, like could stuff be enhanced if we maybe possibly cut some of the stuff out? And you know, that would be changes from the source material, but like, I'm okay with that to a certain extent. Laris is one of these people that, dude, every time he's on screen, I love it so much. And I'm like, man, what if we were getting this amount of Laris every episode? That would be crazy, right? Like, that could be pretty huge. I think that there's been plenty of people in the Game of Thrones show, though, that missed episodes and, you know, only had maybe three main pieces in a season and still delivered. So it's fine. But I
does Laris seem as important to you this season?
I feel like yes, in some ways, because
he doesn't feel as powerful this season.
He doesn't feel maybe as powerful, but we should remember. And actually, this is a really good point I wanted to bring up. I'm glad we're talking about Laris, because Laris was instrumental in sowing discord between Otto and Aegon earlier in the season. And what pushes Laris to go talk to Aegon? Well, Aemon saying that I will be bringing back my grandsire. I'll be bringing back Otto Hightower. And you could tell Laris is like, fuck, like, damn it. Like, I did so much work to get him out of here. And now, now he's going to come back. So it's one of those things where like Laris maybe that hasn't had like the most powerful scenes, but he certainly moved pieces on the board all along.
Oh, certainly.
And we have to always wonder what was Laris's doings and what wasn't. We have to wonder about the lack of security in episode one. We've talked about, you know, the reasons why, and one of the things we said is like, how much did Laris have to do with these things? And getting Allison, you know, kind of out of the picture, you know, was that partly due to him? It's hard to say. But Laris dropping a tear in the scene like kind of shocked me for a second. Like, I was like, oh my god, like, he's being human, this is crazy. And Aegon not saying much, but performing so well. I just thought the performances all around this episode were
They were great.
Oh man. Yeah.
they were great. Okay, well, other than that,
I got something.
Go ahead.
Dayron is 10-6 and is taken to his dragon. And so this is all very cool because we know eventually he's going to show up. How, and in the preview, by the way, for the last two seasons, he's mentioned, or last two episodes of the season, he's mentioned again in the preview, which is very cool. Alicent has raised all of her kids with her except for one, and he is the only one that has been described as kind, maybe other than Helena. But I think from like their perspectives, sure, like Helena's certainly disturbed, right? She's kind of all of her boys, none of them would be described as nice or kind-hearted. And then she hears from her brother that Dayron is. And it's like, was it King's Landing or the mother? I think is what she asks. And her brother says, I'm sure you did your best. It's like, whoo, man, that for Alicent, that's almost a gut punch. Like, I feel like she would almost have been a little bit relieved. They said, Dayron, he's cool, but you know, he has a temper, or he's kind of rude, or maybe he's mean to animals. So you'd be like, okay, at least right. He's consistent with the other boys. It wasn't me. Hearing that Dayron, not only, you know, obviously has a dragon, he's down there, big news, but for Alicent's character, it's a huge blow to her to find out that Dayron has been raised well. Away from her. It's crazy.
She says, yeah, kindness is a good quality, essentially, is what.
Man, I can't wait to see Dayron. He's one of those characters that we have yet to see, and there's been a lot of speculation about it, but like, I'm not going to spoil anything. Dayron is clearly going to be in the show. How about that?
For sure. We almost thought they might not even show him.
We thought that he might be cut. Yeah, we did think that. But hey, he's going to be.
Which, remember, by the way, because of the lack of Maelor, their other son of Aegon, he is third in line to be king.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. If something were to happen to Aemon and something were to happen to Aegon, he is now the next in line.
Dayron has been bumped up the food chain thanks to HBO.
Okay, so the last thing I want to talk about outside of Daemon, which I think is where we spend the big chunk of the rest of this, is man, Missaria. She her and Rhaenyra, which I'm already seeing some people say they don't like it.
Yeah, I don't understand why anyone would be upset about this. I think that this is very Game of Thrones-esque. Like, did Cersei not just do this with everyone in Feast for Crows? Like, yeah. Did you guys remember reading those books? I don't think that there's anything wrong with this necessarily, except, and I wanted to ask you how you felt about this. We get the story of Missaria's scars, right? And find out she has another one where she can't bore children. It is a very grotesque and awful thing to happen to someone. Does it not feel a little weird that, like, after someone were to confess something like that, that you would then, like, make a move on them? Like, doesn't that feel a little... I don't know. That part is what makes it feel awkward. I don't care that she's kissing a girl. I'm sure there's people mad out there that she's kissing a girl. I don't care about that at all. They're Targaryens. She's married to Daemon, her uncle. I mean, like, her kissing a girl is the least of my worries. But I was like, would someone...
Well, there are some pieces that come later that is spoiler territory, which maybe we'll talk about in like a patron thing this week, that could play a role into. It also could help add some distance between Rhaenyra and Daemon, since they obviously now both maybe have sort of feelings for Missaria, right? Yeah. And it gives them, by doing it, it gives them some options for things they could do down the line, which I think is what they are ultimately doing with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that this is good, because we have to remember that, like, a lot of Missaria's story is untold in the book, and Rhaenyra, for, you know, obviously is a main character in Fire and Blood, but there's still a lot of details to flesh out with that, and then her relationship with Daemon. So, like, I don't know. This is one of those times, Matt, where I feel really weird because I don't understand why people get upset about certain things. Like, I don't see how this hurts the characters. I think being that lonely as Rhaenyra has been and feeling like everyone's doubting her, and then she has Missaria, who has believed in her and understands what she's trying to accomplish, and then Rhaenyra finally admitting, like, this sense of doubt, and being comforted in that moment. Like, I think all that makes sense. My only gripe is like it following the Masaria child abuse is a little weird to me. Like, I almost would have preferred that to happen at the beginning of the episode, then maybe by the end this thing happens. But like the idea of Rhaenyra and Masaria being together or having some sort of feelings for each other, I don't think it's all that out there, and it doesn't bother me. Like, I just opened up our poll. I saw some people saying that like ruined it, awful ending because of
yeah.
it. I just simply don't get it, I guess. Like, I don't understand when these type of things make people upset. But I don't know. I think that you're right. It could set up to something a little bit bigger later.
Yeah. So, okay. Let's move on to Daemon. Wow. A lot of stuff to break down. Continuing to have visions at Harrenhal that are likely caused by Alice Rivers, who, again, as we said, is now no longer a ghost. They've acknowledged her. And that line with Laris, too. Talking about, oh, maybe it was some sorcery by some serving person at Harrenhal.
Yeah,
they did it. I think that was a very that was obviously a very intentional line to add in.
Are we going to get a Laris Alice like showdown at some point? You think?
Maybe.
Also, maybe. Like, and I'm not going to say any spoilers, but like knowing where the Alice River stuff goes, I'm so. How are we going to get there?
Well, the crazy thing about the Alice Rivers thing, and we've said this before, is that we don't actually know where it goes. Her story isn't finished in Fire and Blood, so they can do whatever they want with her.
Yes. Yes.
There's a couple things we know that'll happen over the next few episodes or whatever, but I mean, it's really just completely, it's wide open.
Yeah, and this is why it's still really fun for me and you to watch the show and many other people who, well, I should say from a lot of people who have read Fire and Blood. Some people want it to be like verbatim, whereas you and I are always more open to some infidelity to the source material, as they would say. And I don't know, dude. I don't know exactly how it's going to end up going. And it has me, and I know you too, questioning of some of the things that we know that happen in that area later. Of like what really, like what is the show going to say happen? Not that that's the objective truth. It's not. But like this telling of Fire and Blood, what is the reality going to be there? And like, so, all right, we should also talk about this because me and you both said that like, okay, Daemon's been in Harrenhal for a minute now. This episode had the least amount of stuff that I was probably interested in with Daemon's Harrenhal because I like the magical stuff. I like the horror feelings that go into this. But I was actually a little bit relieved when I thought he was about to leave Harrenhal. Like, I was like, okay, good. He's going to leave Harrenhal. Like, we're going to move on a little bit with Daemon. And me and you have both talked about how Daemon is the most popular character in the show. And that's not us saying that. That's based on a poll with a lot of people. It's anecdotal.
Lots of polls, yeah.
It is anecdotal, but it would seem that a large amount of people, at least online, Daemon is their favorite character. Having him kind of tread this water this long, I don't know, dude. Like, this is one of those things where I'm trying to reserve all my judgment until I see.
It's true to the source material, though.
He's there for a year, I think.
He's there for a long time, man.
He's there for a long time.
He's there for a long time. But, you know, of course, the show plays with time periods.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, actually, if he were to leave next episode, that'd be, which he might, actually.
He might.
He might actually. He's going to be there way. It's going to be way less time.
I got news for you. Based on the preview, I don't think he's leaving, unfortunately. But
I know. But I'm just saying. I obviously the way they're going to time this thing, I think a lot of events will actually happen much sooner than they do in the books.
Yeah, and one thing that, you know, I said this I think two episodes ago, but like post Rhaenys dying, Fire and Blood goes to this really weird like kind of recanting like what other things were happening at the time, like. I was so curious to see how they would adapt this section of Fire and Blood, or I should say the Dying of the Dragon, or the Dance of Dragons, whatever we want to call it, because it's not super entertaining in the book itself, and as a television show, does not work. So right now, the creators and the writers, they're doing a lot of heavy lifting because I love the books more than anything, guys. But like this section of Fire and Blood is not super adaptable, like for really compelling television. So this Daemon stuff is kind of trying to stretch out that year. Now we could also argue, hey, well, they could have done it differently and done it better. But like, well, this is not one of those times where you look at it and you say, well, they should have followed Damon's story perfectly from the book. I don't think this right. is one of those times. So basically what I'm trying to say is there's some stuff I like about it, but I am understanding of people who feel like this has gone on a little long, but I don't know what else you would do at this point with Damon, unless if you just want him not to be featured, which I would rather have it than not, I think.
Yeah. 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 I'm with you. I actually liked it. I actually liked this stuff, this episode more, I think, because we're getting more Alice Rivers and we're learning a little bit more about her. You know, they mentioned like, oh, the Weirwoods, right? Maybe it's the Weirwoods, right? That Weirwood bed you're sleeping in. We saw the Weirwood tree and the dragon sitting above it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Just a cool way to look at that too. I mean, that just imagery, you could go in so many directions of like, oh, are the dragons more powerful than the old gods of the Weirwoods and all of those things, right? It was dragons that came in and took down Harrenhal, which was the seat of power, you know, and all that stuff. So that was definitely another cool just for that shot alone. But he begins to ask her for help, and instead of sending a raven, of course, she sends an owl.
Yes. And me and you've been talking about the significance of owl versus, you know, possible birds and what owls have signified to other characters, right, like Helena. And
right. And then also remember that then we find out that Tully's dead.
Ooh, yeah.
How did he die? And even Simon Strong says, well, I don't know. Maybe Alice Rivers had something to do with it. It's literally Alice what he says
over there. And Alice said it would turn in 3 days' time. And Damon realizes that she was correct. And now Oscar's going to go there. So he has to deal with all these Riverlands people and lords. So he does have stuff to do. It might just
not and be she just, as I said in, you know, last week's episode, don't know, man. She had access to some of his king's blood.
Yeah, we did talk about this and how she immediately jumped on that bleeding hand of Damon.
Which, by the way, actually a lot of people commented and said actually they do on TikTok. They said that even in A Song of Ice and Fire, a lot of people are more on the train that King's blood, it might be more powerful than regular blood magic.
And that is one of those
which I've always viewed as like, I don't know if it's just blood magic. You know, it's kind of like, are they dragon dreams or are they green dreams?
Or are they just something in general that people attach meanings to, right?
Right. And but we do know that obviously some Targaryens had dreams well before they even came to Westeros. So
that's true. That's very true.
But do some people just have, and can you have green dreams on other sides of Planetos?
And why do they have to be green?
Well, they're not. If they're Targaryen, they're red.
That's right. They're dragon dreams. So, and you know, there's the big debate of whether these things are the same or where they spawn from, which god is real. And that's kind of the fun of Westeros, because Martin doesn't feel the need to explain everything about his magic. And that's actually, in my opinion, kind of more interesting. Did you notice in the opening of the show they included Rook's Rest and Rhaenys dying?
Oh no, I didn't.
No. Yeah, go watch. I noticed it. I love the intro, dude. I blare it every time. I've turned that baby up to max. I'm like, oh, this
is yeah. I do like it more than the blood of the dragon flowing. Obviously, it's still not as good as Game of Thrones, but
oh, that's the goat. You're never gonna beat that. You know,
I mean, it's the same song. I mean, it's the exact same song, but the way they're, you know, just have to do it different ways. Yeah. So
kind of thing.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's pull up some of the YouTube polls and see what you guys are saying here. And
yeah, we got 53% of 5 stars, right? Well, there's 400 votes, almost 420.
I'll refresh my page here.
Yeah. You got 53% right now at 5 stars. You got 21% at 4, 16 at 3, 5 at 2 and 1. And we have about 30 comments right now.
That's actually the highest 5, 2 and 1 stars I think we've ever had.
Yeah.
But of course, there's still more votes to come in.
I'm reading some of the comments. You know, there are sometimes where I don't know. The internet is such a hateful place.
Yeah. Worse than last week. And with 2 episodes left, you think they'd be more precious with wasting screen time. I know I looked at some of them. There's spoilers, so I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, and I doubt anyone's gonna listen that's leaving these comments, but like, please do not spoil this show for other people who have not read Fire and Blood. That's not cool.
I don't understand the sexual relationship between Rhaenyra and Massaria. That kind of came out of nowhere to me. Yeah, I think a lot of people, I can certainly see how people are gonna feel that. I would imagine that will be a criticism of this episode.
I feel like I made a decent case for it though, in the situation that they're in. But you know, I don't know, Matt. This, like I said, this is one of these times where like, I have criticisms. I did, for instance, whenever Rhaenyra went to the temple or whatever, when she went to King's Landing, I was like,
you didn't like it.
I didn't like it, you know, but like, it doesn't result in me being like, this show is ruined or this show sucks. You know what I mean? Like there could be good and bads. And I feel like a lot of times on the internet, that's kind of lost on people. Like that's not the way the internet talks about things. And that can be tiring, I guess is the word I would use at times.
Yeah, another person here, which again, I think you touched on this a little bit earlier, is I don't mind Rhaenyra and Masaria's relationship. However, it culminating when Masaria, the White Worm, confessed she was raped by her dad was a bit weird.
Yeah, that my problem is the placement of that. Like, I don't understand why those two scenes need to be together. And maybe the idea is that they're both being vulnerable in that scenario where Rhaenyra is basically saying, hey, like for the first time, she's saying, I can't win this war. And then Masaria is being vulnerable in that. But it's the context of her vulnerability that bothers me a little bit. But as far as them having like, you know, a moment or being intimate, I think that it's not the most outrageous thing. People will be more upset about that than Daemon grooming Rhaenyra. Like that is a crazy, it's a crazy thing to think about. But you know, whatever, people are going to feel they want. I think me and you are very positive on this episode, and I guess maybe.
Yeah, I'm at four stars.
Yeah, I think
last week was my least favorite episode.
Yeah,
but I mean, again, it's a breather episode. We knew it was going to be, but I think I still sort of just felt.
Yeah, me and you also do not require a bunch of action. Me and you, we like the Sopranos. We like Game of Thrones before season 7 and 8 and 6. And if you go back and watch those early seasons of Game of Thrones, I implore you to tell me how many battles happen in season 1. Not many at all, and none, in fact, because they skip it. So I don't know. I see a lot of cries where like there's not enough action, and I just don't feel that way. So
was this the most dragon heavy episode?
There's a lot of dragons, huh? A lot of dragons.
Yeah.
We get a badass line in the preview where Rhaenyra says, "We will install peace with these dragons." It's like, oh, here we go. She's embracing it.
There's a comment here saying Sea Smoke pulling a prank.
Yeah.
That was ruthless. It's a prank. Yeah, I'll let you ride me. No, guess not.
Yeah, we've all been there. We've all been there. I've been tricked by dragons many times before. Also, we said this, but I just wanted to flush this out. Oh God, I keep saying it. I want to iron this out a little bit more. I want to talk about it more. Rhaenyra steps up this episode and starts being active while also expressing her doubts. She goes and jumps on her dragon, doesn't answer to Jace. Jace and her have a bit of tension still. Rhaenyra has been an underwhelming character. Not the performance. I think Emma Darcy's phenomenal, but I've just been wanting more for Rhaenyra this season. And this episode is trending in the right direction now for her character that is going to get a lot more complex, not just the end of the season, but next season as well.
Yeah, let's see. So far on IMDb, again, IMDb tends to be a little more favorable and you have to wait for things. But right now it's 9.7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's actually what it was last week, too. You know, I think a lot of the times the people who really love House of the Dragon or really hate them are the first people to want to get online and talk about it. And then I think you get a little bit more of the in-between and normal crowd jumping in to rate it, which is always great on Fall of Friday whenever we're able to kind of look and see where things settled at. Because last week, I remember Regent wasn't doing too bad on IMDb, but now it is 7.6, which is the lowest. Yeah, it's the lowest rated episode. I have a strong feeling, Matt, on a rewatch, whenever season 3 is coming out, where we watch it, I bet you watching it in its entirety with all the context, I think we're going to like these episodes a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't dislike it. I'm at 4 out of 5 stars.
And you are positive on this episode. You know, I think people could tell, you know, especially I was a little higher on it than you were. There's things I really, really liked about the episode. But like in general, I think most people said, you know, this wasn't the best episode. It followed the best episode possibly of the show so far. But this episode, this is one of those times where I feel like when I see people like really hating it, I feel crazy because I'm like, what wasn't there? There had to be something there for you to enjoy. Had to be. But maybe not.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm looking at just some of the images of next week and whew, it looks good.
The last two, the preview. So I don't really care for previews. I mean, you've talked about
this. I try not to watch them.
So I watched this one and I got to say it was the most hype one I've seen. It was pretty sick.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, we will be back for Follow Up Friday. We got a lot of new people over on Patreon. Again, want to really say thank you guys for that. And we got some more stuff. We'll probably do another spoiler edition because, man, there was some stuff, you know, in this episode, Jimmy, we can't really talk about, right? And a lot of it is actually kind of do with some of the small folk. We gotta small expand folk a little bit more on the small folk's role because they are really hyping up some things that are going to be big, big events.
Trying right? to and also figure out how this Alice River stuff's going to shake out.
Yeah. Not flush out or flush out.
Yeah. God.
All right. It's okay. That's enough. All right. Well, that's enough for this week. So, but yeah, so we will be back doing Follow Up Friday. So be sure to send us your Ravens at btkcast@gmail.com. Obviously, bendthepodcast.com. And real quick, I know we hit it in the outro and we'll hit it again here. But if you guys want a free way to help support the episode, man, those iTunes reviews are huge. Those really go a long way to helping us. And if you were a YouTube watcher, obviously smash that subscribe button, like button. Those help the analytics. Yep, they help all the things. So with that, we want to thank you guys for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing House of the Dragon, Season 2, Episode 7.
Yes, and if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We'll see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly.